Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson Extra. I am Jason, the Star Child Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson, but you already knew that because you're beautiful, sexy patrons who support us here on Patreon. And you just listened to our incredible, one of my most favorite episodes to record in recent memory, Kiss Coom Scooby-Doo episode with Kevin Shinnick, and we bullied him into coming back.
Yes. Thanks again for joining us for a little bit extra.
Of course, of course.
Real quick, give everybody your Instagram and Twitter handles in case they were already convinced from the regular episode that you're just too cool to not follow on social media.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's just at Kevin Shinnick, and Shinnick is S-H-I-N-I-C-K.
See, not only a man who is kind and knows how to collaborate, but good at branding.
We're exactly.
We're going to start.
Yeah, I'm the same on both, but you can find me there.
Great. We're just going to start talking about your career and asking you about certain things. And since Ashley has been a fan of you since Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego, I'm going to start this out with, on your Wikipedia entry, sir.
You also have a Wikipedia with a photo, which is very impressive.
Yes, you're probably the most famous person we've ever had on this podcast.
I have to thank someone at Comic-Con for posting that because I was like, oh, nice photo.
The line from the first line in your television and film work entry says, television series Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego, a PBS show which launched him into teen magazines, trading cards, and his own action figure.
I had those trading cards.
Awesome.
I want to hear the stories of you have your own action figure.
Well, the truth of that is there's an action figure, but there's only two. And the reason is because when I was working on Robot Chicken, it was like one of my I think it might have been the first sketch I wrote for them that got in. And, you know, it's Seth Green and Mess Enreich's show. And I just became such fast friends with those guys as soon as I met them that I've been with them actually more than 10 years now, I think about it. This weekend will be their 10th anniversary party that we're going to tomorrow night. But point being, one of the first sketches I wrote was a Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego sketch. And at the end of the day, everybody reads the sketches, and Seth was laughing, and he was like, how do you even remember this show? And I was like, remember it? I was the host of it. And he was like, you are kidding me. And he's like, we totally have to do this. And so they created an action figure of me too, in fact, and they used that to create the sketch, which you can, if you look it up, it's a, I forget what the sketch is, but if you say Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego and Robot Chicken, it'll come up. It's basically me dealing with a cheating girlfriend in a breakup while filming the show, while filming an episode. It came out pretty funny, but yes, that is why the action figure has to do with Robot Chicken, but the trading cards, and I was in, I think it was Teen Beat was still on the magazine stands when the series was on, and I was in Teen Beat. So, yes, that was a momentous occasion.
That's amazing. I'm going to honestly say it. I've never met anybody that was featured in Teen Beat. Congratulations on being the first.
Yes, well, there you go. There you go.
So you've done a lot of work in Robot Chicken. You've done a lot of work in animation.
Yeah.
The one I want to talk about here is Marvel Spider-Man.
Oh yeah.
Now, what were you executive producer on that show?
I was supervising producer, but I was the showrunner, and I mean that was me from top to bottom in terms of running that room with a great room of writers, and it was my idea for season one, the story arc and whatnot. So yeah, that was basically after Mad, Marvel had come out to me and asked if I wanted to pitch them on a new Spider-Man series. Ultimate Spider-Man was wrapping up and they wanted a different direction, and when I come in and pitch them, and so I did, and they really liked it, and so cut to, I got the gig and we brought that to life, and it's still on. I think like the second half of season two is airing now on Disney XD. But yeah, again, as I said earlier, you know, I've been very fortunate and very lucky to always work on things that I love. And I loved Spider-Man growing up. In fact, again, this carries little weight except for small circles. But apparently I am the only person to have written Spider-Man for the comics, the stage, and the screen.
Whoa!
Because I wrote Spider-Man for the comics. I did Avenging Spider-Man and Superior Spider-Man Team-Up and a bunch of those things. And then about a decade before Julie Taymor did Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, Broadway producers had come to me and said, hey, we have the rights to Spider-Man. Would you like to take a whack at pitching us an idea? And I said, yes, because I have a Broadway background as an actor. And I thought, what an opportunity. If knowing how much I love theater, I thought this is a great way to get kids into the theater. And so I put everything on that stage that I can think of or into that script, and I pitched it, and Marvel loved it, and these producers loved it. So we did it, and it premiered at Radio City Music Hall, and then it toured the country for like 40 weeks, and it was this huge success for us, and we had a fabulous time. This goes back a number of ways. This is like 2003. So I had Spider-Man background or Spider-Man in my blood. So when they came to me and said, would you be interested in pitching this? I was like, yeah. And as much as I loved Ultimate Spider-Man, I thought he was it was a choice, but it was like he was mostly Spider-Man most of the time. And it was action packed with S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff. And I kind of missed what I loved about Spider-Man, which was the Peter Parker of it all. You know, I really related to him, and I'm saying nothing new. That's the whole reason Stan Lee created it, was because he was the first kid who wasn't a sidekick. He was an actual hero. And I wanted to bring out all the angst again that we had kind of missed. And so, yeah, that show is still currently running.
Now, just to give everybody a perspective out there in case they don't know, when did you wrap all your episodes? When did you finish writing? Because animation takes a long time. A lot of people don't realize this. When did you finish all your scripts for that show?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's funny. I had to look up scripts the other day, and I think we did 26 episodes, okay? And I looked at my first script, and I looked at my 26th script, and they were almost exactly a year apart. But then you also have to remember there's at least another year in there of recording and going back and doing edits and pickups and things like that and fixing animation. So, you know, a good 2 years almost goes in there, because I started that, I'd say, in 2015, and it only premiered, I think, 2017 or 2018.
Now, my next two questions for you are all Spider-Man based. First off, in your Spider-Man Broadway show,
mm-hmm.
what was the style of Aunt May's song?
Well, just to be clear, ours didn't go on Broadway. It went on Radio City. It went to Radio City.
Oh, my apologies.
No, it's all right. I don't want to get all these angry letters from
just a tiny little off Broadway engagement.
Yeah, a place that no one's heard of. So mine was not a musical. It had music in it, and it was scored, but it was a straight play.
Oh.
And basically, it came
That's
out.
That's such a better idea. I saw Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. I could say that.
I did too.
Oh, boy.
You know, I saw it after it had been somewhat quote unquote fixed. I never did see the original Julie Taymor, you know, untouched production. There's a great book out there, though. I can't remember his name, but he's the guy who wrote it. Wrote the musical. It's called something like Song of the Spider-Man, and it kind of just tells you the treachery and the tough time, which again lasted about a decade for these four people in bringing that show to Broadway. But I like to say I did mine for about $60 million cheaper, and and fewer people died.
Yeah, I mean, true. The production that I saw, someone broke their ankles.
I know that was just riddled with problems. But like I said, mine wasn't a musical. Mine was a straight play, and it came out. It sounds so funny now because it's so long ago. But when the Tobey Maguire one had come out,
mm-hmm.
and that had not come out yet when I was writing it. So ours was very similar up until the point that he becomes Spider-Man. But then mine veered off in a different direction than the movie did, obviously. And I had made, because when I grew up with Spider-Man, and this is deep, or not a deep cut, but if you know Spider-Man or not, Norman Osborn wasn't around. It was Harry Osborn who was the Green Goblin.
Mm-hmm.
So I, to make it more kid-friendly, kept it Harry. I just cut right to Harry being the Green Goblin in my stage version. And so it was nice that later on, even the Tobey Maguire one caught up with Harry becoming some sort of goblin figure there. But
so good. It's my preferred Green Goblin.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's who you grow up with. You know what I mean? So, but that's how that happened.
So you got to write Spider-Man, who right. you love and would maybe say is a hero of yours. You got to write Kiss, who you love and might would say are heroes of yours. What is next for you? What is left for you to conquer in the IP world?
I don't know. You know, I had the Star Wars novel coming out, and that was just a dream come true to work on that. And so it's a good question. I mean, I've written some Batman comics. I was also a big fan of that.
He says casually.
Yeah, I just drop that at parties. But, I don't know. You know, I mean, certain things may not be as in the zeitgeist now as they were when I loved them. But like, I still would love to do something with Planet of the Apes. I would like to do more superheroes. I still love comics. There are so many, you know, I'm a huge Back to the Future fan. There's tons of stuff out there, but also I would like to create more of my own stuff too. So, while I love the IP world and mm-hmm. have been very blessed with just reliving my childhood, you know, I joke that I've turned my midlife crisis into a career by following the things that I loved. But yeah, I would like to spend some time creating something that would inspire someone down the line to do what I'm doing with my property.
Whenever you get around to your Planet of the Apes franchise reboot,
yes.
I am throwing in my resume right now for
all
your
right.
assistant.
Excellent.
And
excellent.
Ape number 5.
I'm sorry, that went to Kevin Smith.
Ah, Jesus.
That's so funny for so many different reasons. Yep. But I do want to ask because, and I'm sure you've been asked this a lot, but we do have a lot of listeners who are creatives or are aspiring to be creatives, and you have worked on a lot of very impressive things. What advice would you have for people who are just starting out or are thinking about dipping their toe in television or comic book writing?
You know, if I had to boil it down, I mean, it's a lot of things, but two things are important. And that is, you know, write. If you love writing, then write. If you don't have a job, it doesn't matter. Write, because you will get the opportunity at some point. And when that opportunity comes, they're going to want to see what you do. And then we're going to want to see your work. And the thing that I learned early on is, yes, at some point, if you want to write sitcoms, they're going to want to see a sitcom. If you want to write features, they're going to want to see a feature. However, a lot of people just want to get your flavor and want to know, can you write and are you funny, if that's what you're going for. So I was surprised to find that like sketches went a long way for me. You know, if you're kind of overwhelmed by the idea of writing a screenplay or even an hour long drama or something like that, start small. Do a short story. Do, you know, a one act. Do a comic book. Do whatever you like. I said, just some sketches, because when I'm looking for writers, especially, you know, I've done a lot of sketch with Robot Chicken and Mad and whatnot. And if I'm doing something more than that, I'm going to want to see that you can do a sitcom or an hour-long drama or whatnot. But again, if I got a lot to read, and if I can get your voice quickly, then all the better. So on one hand, that's a key piece of advice. And the other one really is be the kind of person that people want to work with. Because more than talent in terms of writing, you know, in this business, you spend a lot of time with people. You spend 14-hour days with people, and you can have a brilliant writer. But if they're a jerk in the room, or they're always on, or I'm just exhausted sometimes with them, I'm not going to want to be in a room with them. I would rather go with a person I thought was not as talented, but, you know, knew how to be in a room, knew how to support people, and knew how to be a good person. So those are my two tips.
Those are great tips, especially the attitude of like how you work with people. That's something that we tell a lot of our listeners that that is 100% true. Like you could be, you know, say in a list of top 10 writers, you could be number 8. But if your personality is number 1, you'll be hired over those other 8 people every
Absolutely.
Single time.
Absolutely.
So that's amazing advice. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us for our extra episode. You mentioned again you have a Star Wars book coming out. Please tell everybody when that is coming out so they know when they need to pre-order it so we can get it on the bestsellers of the sci-fi list.
I would love that. The title is Star Wars Force Collector, and it comes out November 19th of this year, which is 2019.
That's great. And where can they find you again online? Just we want to make sure we drop that.
at Kevin Shinnick on Twitter or on Instagram. I think you can also find me on Facebook.
I also have it on good authority. We can find you at Kiss conventions.
That's true.
And I mean that without a hint of irony. That's a real thing that Kevin told us.
That is true. I got to say, I had been invited to some Kiss conventions, and I love them because in many ways it reminds me of what Comic-Con was when I was a kid. I still love Comic-Con, but it kind of gets lost in like the premieres and the movies and the this and the that. And Kiss conventions are still just people who like to meet at a hotel and have stuff to share, whether it be stories or, you know, things you really probably won't find much online because they've had it in their basement all this time. So seek those out. They're, you know, those Kiss conventions are really great, as are the Comic-Cons. This will air afterwards, but I'm going to New York Comic-Con, and then I'm sure more next year in 2020. So look for me.
Well, Kevin, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And this was a blast. Thank you so much. This was just so much. This was like one of my favorite episodes of all time. So thank you so much for joining us. Everybody out there, thank you so much for supporting our Patreon. It's because of your support that we can talk to Kevin more and you get more extra podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. I am Jason, soon to be ape number 6, Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson.
Bye-bye, all our super friends.